Welcome to The Squid of Despair, unscripted musings on business life, leadership, creativity, transformation, and all the myriad of other work-life events that get in the way of a good night's sleep. Hosted by David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor.
Hello, Daz.
Peter, hello, how are you?
I'm good, we're back. It's always amazing. Every time we come back, and it's like we keep going. Great.
We do, and we've had some listener feedback as well, haven't we, since last time?
We did, yes, and people like it.
Well, there's been a few complaints that I'm not offensive enough anymore, and I need to tease you, and, you know, I just can't help but not do that, really. It's like kicking a puppy. I mean, it's just not on, is it?
I'm a puppy now. I don't think that's like that at all, really.
Oh, I have far too much respect for you to be rude, Peter, but anyway, I will try harder to be a little bit.
We both know that is absolute rubbish. Anyway, shall we get going?
Well, yeah, but what have you been doing, Peter, since we did this last? Any interesting events that you've been speaking at? Have you got any new books out?
I haven't written a book in the last month. No, even I'm not that fast. No, I have no new books out. I've done a couple of speaking gigs. I'm going to be going off to the PMI conference soon. So that's kind of good.
Very good. Yeah. Somewhere lovely, presumably, because you do tend to do the PMI conferences in the winter in warm weather, I've noticed.
And this one's in Vegas. No, it's not. It's cold.
Okay. All right. I believe you, Peter. But yeah, you haven't done any sessions recently? Have you?
I feel you're angling. I feel I've been navigated towards the event that I did recently for PMI in the UK.
Well, I heard there was a good story behind it, so I am fishing slightly here. Yeah. You're right.
Fishing? I think you're dynamite in the water. There's nothing subtle about this at all. Yes, I did an event in London with PMI and PwC. It was a panel of people. There was a couple of great people in town who I was on the stage with. We'd never been on stage together, so it was kind of a unique opportunity.
One
of
the guys. So they don't know what hit them, basically.
They do know what hit them. I mean, they know quite well. But yes, so we were asked. Obviously, the intros could be quite boring. You know, Peter Taylor, blah blah blah, books, blah blah blah,
blah blah blah. Yeah.
Yeah, all that. But they like, yeah, tell us something interesting about yourself. And I naturally go towards the. I have 9 children.
Of course.
As you do.
That is interesting.
And the lady who was like who was emceeing made the response to that of, well, you must really love children. Ooh, and I could not help myself. I could not help myself responding to that, saying, no, but I like making them.
Yeah, not a great way to start off a conference on project management, really, Peter. But no, that is funny. I bet you got a laugh, didn't you?
Yeah, I got a laugh and I got a look from the guy who organized the whole thing and indication of like, you know, I think actually what he said later on, you know, we want a relaxed, open evening. All questions are good, but maybe a little higher than the level that Peter just set.
Yeah, well, you know, Peter, I mean, this is your filters, isn't it? We've talked about this before. When you hear relaxed and open, you actually go to places that people don't normally go to when they talk about relaxed and open. But anyway, it's what I love about you, and it's what makes these podcasts hopefully quite interesting for our listener.
This is my USP.
There we go.
Okay, let's get going. Daz, what is the squid of the day?
So, Peter, the squid of the day for today is I would like to talk to you and get your feedback and opinions about the pros and cons of optimism.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Now, I know from our background that you always look on the bright side of life, and please don't start singing. And it's a trait.
Did you say don't start singing?
I did say don't stop singing.
I'm sorry.
And it's a trait that you've carried through your life, and I appreciate that about you. It's something that is important to me. And we've sort of touched on it before when we've talked about fun at work, but I'd like to dig a bit deeper on the topic of optimism, because I think it's a very interesting one, because I would like to make the premise that there's a bright side and a dark side to optimism. Ooh, and I'd like to explore it a bit with you.
Okay.
And perhaps to, you know, just to talk a little bit about it while you're Googling.
I thought I was typing quickly and quietly there.
No. I can hear what you're doing.
I wasn't cheating.
I think it's true to say that actually being around optimists actually is a good place to be. And I'd like to suggest some characteristics of optimists. So I've sort of known with my great advanced years that actually I seek out people that give me energy. And one of the sorts of people that give me energy is actually people with a sense of humor, because I do like to you know, enjoy a laugh about things. And more broadly, perhaps people that are optimistic. And I did a little bit of research, Peter. I took a leaf out of your book and sort of did a little bit of background reading. And how about I'm gonna give you a list of attributes that have been ascribed to optimists, and I want to see what you think about this.
Ooh, okay.
Here we go.
How many have I got? I'm gonna make a list on the paper there. How many are there?
Eight.
Eight. Okay. I'm just drawing eight boxes now.
Seven. Just so I can mess up your page.
One box out.
So how about this? So these are not my insights, but they resonated with me when I read them. So characteristics of optimists. Mm-hmm. They forgive. They don't listen to naysayers, where naysayers are being people who would say, can't do that, doesn't work like that, we've never done it like that, you know, that sort of attitude. They surround themselves with upbeat people, and I can relate to that.
Yeah.
Okay. They're interested in others. As a characteristic, they donate time and energy to the things they're passionate about. They express gratitude a lot. And they smile a lot, which made me think of you. I'm sitting here looking at your face on Zoom because we're not on camera, but I do have your smiling face in front of me. And so I rather like that, actually. You know, so they represent, in the opinion of the person I was just reading recently, characteristics of optimists.
Hang on, I've only got six. Was I writing them down? Forgive.
Yep.
Upbeat.
Oh, don't listen to naysayers. You missed that one.
I see. I thought it was all the same thing. Sorry. Okay.
So, you know, you to me are an optimist, Peter. So would you relate to those characteristics?
Interesting. Well, upbeat, yeah. Smile, yeah. Interested in others. Well, I'm interested in some people, yeah. Yeah, passion, definitely. Gratitude. So forgive and gratitude were the two. Yeah, not listening to naysayers, agree. So the two that I would hesitate around, or not hesitate, question, but never really thought about it, is the forgive and the gratitude. I suppose... I suppose it goes hand in hand. It's probably not too much. It's not overt, perhaps. But the forgive one's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to build a bit on this because I thought they were quite interesting observations, and I appreciate your pushback on a couple of them. But you know, I think optimism is a bit of a fuel that you take through challenging times. Would you accept that? That it's something that allows you to carry on through adversity in a way that, if you're not optimistic, is much harder.
Yes. And I have been called an organized fatalist.
Well, you're cutting to the punchline again, Peter, for goodness sake.
Oh, yeah, that's because I'm so good. I'll edit that bit out. I didn't say that at all.
But I think it, for me, optimism is a key element of, you know, what I think we call, well, it's emotional intelligence. I think it's a component of, and as such, I think it's a very important component of leadership. I think optimism is a sort of a disposition that generates behavior that I think is essential for leadership. And it's very, very hard, I think, to follow a pessimistic leader.
Yeah, true. Only into the depths of hell.
Well, you know, life is tough. And if you're going to transform or you're going to do something exciting, you actually want to believe that it's going to work, don't you? And I think this is one of the things I'm going to come back to as the downside of optimism, that actually that belief in it's all going to turn out is actually perhaps the definition of optimism, isn't it? That you believe that you're going to have more good outcomes than you're going to have bad outcomes.
Yes, and, you know, I use the word tickety-boo quite a lot.
Yeah. And I'd love to know how that translates into German, but perhaps we'll do that for another day.
I don't know. It's a word that isn't used with the German football team right now.
Now, Peter. We have a global audience. Don't go there.
They've been going there for years. It's our turn. Right, sorry.
So it's so I think it's a characteristic that's very important for exhibiting leadership. And there's something about optimism that engenders, enthusiasm, interest. I think people are more engaged with an optimistic projection than a pessimistic projection. I mean, we talked on previous podcasts that with change comes opportunity. And think about all the businesses that are founded during a recession. We've had the good fortune to work for organization software companies in the main, where the software works equally well during times of recession or times of growth. Because in times of growth, it's about how do you grow more, and in times of recessions, it's about how do you control your costs more.
Yeah.
And we've had different manifestations of that, haven't we? And so, you go through recessions, and very significant businesses have grown out of recessions because they've taken an opportunity that's perhaps being easier to access because everyone's an extremist, and so the risk of doing something new doesn't seem as bad. But someone in the middle of that was optimistic about that. They weren't saying that we're doomed, we've lost our market share, this is never going to work. They're saying there's an opportunity here. And I think that's a particular type of leadership that I think's related to optimism.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And there's a great Shakespeare quote, actually, which underlines my point, so I'm going to use it. Okay. There's nothing good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And so I think what that's saying in a Shakespearean sort of way is that stuff happens, it's how you respond to it that's important. And I think optimists tend to look at the positive side of change and risk and downsides and misfortune, and pessimists, which we'll come on to, tend to have a different relationship with things that have gone wrong.
Okay.
Are you with me?
So if we stick to positive optimism, it's interesting because for me it just is generally optimistic. Things will be okay, but I recognize behind that is there's a lot of sometimes hard work to make it so. So it's interesting that thinking about, because I've never really thought about it in is it a kind of an emotion, is it a kind of state of the mind, is it a our attitude, or anything like that.
That's why I brought this up, Peter, because I wanted to know what you thought about it.
Well, thank you. I'm trying to work out what I think about it. I don't know. It's just I always felt strangely sort of conflicted in that area. That I do have I have a positive outlook, but I'm also quite a realist as well.
Mm.
So
that's my second punchline.
I don't want to skip to the end, so I'm not going to say that either.
Yeah. Well, no, I think you do balance the two, the yin and yang of optimism. And I, we talk about the dark side of optimism in a minute, perhaps. But there was another quote I saw, which actually made me think of you. And I say this respectfully, an optimist is a happy idiot, whereas a pessimist is an unhappy idiot. And so you just got to choose whether you want to be happy or unhappy.
Well, thank you for that. That's a respectful approach. And with slightly less respect, that's a bit mean.
No. It made me laugh because it's basically saying we're all idiots and we could choose to be happy or not.
Okay, then. I don't know if I said this during the fun one. Did I talk about the nuns?
Should you? And you didn't, and I'm not sure you should, Peter.
No, it was because I wrote a book about fun.
Yes, you did.
okay, how many minutes in are we? I don't know. It's
5.
Quite a while. I think it was a Swedish study. And they interviewed some novices when they were about to enter the nunnery, convent, whatever.
Can I just interrupt? This sounds like a dreadful start to a joke. Swedish studies on nuns.
No, it's not. They did a study on novices. They hadn't actually taken the final vows. And they got them to write a small bio about their attitude to life. And they returned many years later. It was a long study, very patient people, the Swedes, clearly. And what they found was that, the novices that became nuns and got older, much older, actually, that far more of them were still alive, basically, to a ripe old age, who had written a positive bio or statement about their life. And conversely, those who wrote a less positive, almost sometimes a negative view of life, were not around as much. And it was quite a significant difference. I can't remember the percentage, but it was a big difference between the two. And, you know, their suggestion was that, you know, having an optimistic, happy, positive approach to life is offers up longevity of that life.
Yeah, no, we talked about this before. I'm sure that's true. I'm sure having an optimistic attitude to life, your health, engenders more positive outcomes. And it's a bit like business, isn't it? That, you know, from a business context, if you don't really believe something's going to happen, it's not going to happen because, you know, life can be difficult. But I think the reverse is true, perhaps not completely, but if you do believe something positive can happen, it stands more of a chance if you believe that than if you don't believe that. So
Absolutely. I've gone off on a tangent that I've thought. I was just wondering, is that why I look younger and have more hair than you? Because I'm more optimistic.
I think actually genetics comes into play here, Peter. And that's a very good segue because I wanted to talk to you about that. So I wanted to talk to you about genetics.
Okay.
Do you think that optimism...
I'm Viking, by the way.
Oh, you haven't had your DNA tested?
I have my DNA tested. I was very excited. I was quite a significant percentage of Viking. And much to the annoyance of my very best German colleague, I'm actually 7% German, which he just doesn't believe.
Do you have much Neanderthal in you, Peter?
Like a segue, would you like some? Is it kind of follow up to that one? I'm not sure. No, I didn't see that on my DNA results.
No, I've seen a few people's DNA results, and it's interesting. The Neanderthal genetic code still creeps in, and I wondered if you had a bit. But anyway, let's save that for another day. It was a serious question. So, do you think optimism is something that comes from your genes or your upbringing?
Well, my dad isn't an optimist, so I don't think it came directly to me from him. That's for sure. I don't know. If I look at my close family, I think we're all very different. I'm the most optimistic, I think, out of all, my brother and me anyway, certainly in my close family.
Yeah, I mean, the jury's out on this one actually, but from what I can see, there's a belief that it's sort of, you know, 50-50. I mean, I know that's a fudge, but you know, it's partially inherent in the sense that a lot of our behavioral traits are assumed through our genetic sort of makeup, but it's also partially learnt. And I like that sort of perspective because I think it means that if you're not an optimistic person and that troubles you, I think you can learn behavioral traits and tricks to generate more optimism. So I think would you agree? Well, I think optimism can be generated. And if you think about, we've talked in the past about project success and how you bring teams together to focus on those BHAGs that we've mentioned in the past, that, you know, there are things like, you know, accumulative success, isn't there? Small steps. Yeah. And I think that optimism can be generated through your behavior, even if you're not intrinsically optimistic.
Yes. Well, yes, I think that's part of a leader's job, isn't it? To kind of create that, to be optimistic, but also to create the optimism to bring the group, the team along with you.
Yeah, I think so. And I think then, you know, let's explore the dark side. Can we have optimism? So, you know, so far we've said optimism, you know, positive thinking is a bonus. It helps from a business perspective, perhaps, to be more entrepreneurial. From a leadership perspective, it perhaps makes you more accessible to the people with whom you interact, that it allows for possibilities and transformation to be successful, which otherwise perhaps wouldn't have been. And so feels like a totally good thing. But there is a dark side, I think, to optimisms. And I'm going to give you a list, Peter, again, because I know you like this. You want to come up with your boxes again?
Yeah, new page. I'm off. How many?
At least five. Because this is not scripted, but I do have, you know, I my memory's not that good anymore.
All right,
but,
okay. I've drawn four, five boxes. I'm happy to add.
Okay, so dark side of optimism. So I think optimism at its extreme can lead to poor decision making because you tend to ignore the risks. You've got this rosy view of the possibilities, and therefore the barriers to that possibility you underestimate, I would say, would be one of them.
Okay.
And I think perhaps more generally, you know, very optimistic people can be a little bit delusional. You know, it's not realistic. And you know, if you look at the project world, look at the how often we inaccurately calculate the time and cost to deliver large projects. And I think there's something to do with the human psyche there about wanting things to be successful, assuming the best. And I know there's all sorts of techniques to put in contingency, but I think there's a distance from realism when you're being hyper optimistic that is dangerous, I would say.
Okay, I've just made a note about something. We're going to come back to it, so you can trigger something there. Okay, carry on.
I would also summarize optimism as having tendencies to be blind to the consequences of your optimism. And so, you know, not everyone is optimistic, and therefore having a pathologically optimistic nature, not that I'm accusing you of that, of course, but I think there are consequences of that.
Okay.
And I think it's not always obvious to the optimists amongst us that actually optimism, full-on optimism, can be really damaging to people.
Okay.
In fact, there's a great book. What was it called? I think it's something called Happiness for People Who Can't Stand Positive People. I think it was called something like that.
Oh, okay.
You wouldn't want to
just because someone's optimistic, super optimistic, you wouldn't want to follow them up, Everest or something or anything like that. You want to go with a professional, a realist.
There you go. There's a balance, isn't there? There's a balance that's sort of coming to the fore here as we discuss it. That's important to temper all those positive components of optimism with some realism.
Okay.
I think optimists tend to have less attention to detail, and you know, again, it's actually part of that sort of. You know, I'm using exaggerated language to emphasize my point, but that sort of slightly delusional view about it's going to be great, I think, can lead to less attention to detail. And part of that, I think, you know, I've seen this, and I might be a bit vulnerable to this myself, actually, but don't tell anyone that. Oh, we're live, aren't we? Okay, never mind, let's move on. That I think optimists tend to, you know, continue to seek new information to confirm their positive perspective.
Ooh. Now, that's interesting. So I would have gone the other way. Optimists don't want information or data to support them. They're just optimists, I think.
Well, no, I'm sure that's true. But I think, you know, some optimists have, you know, are professionals. I'm sure many optimists are professionals. And as part of, you know, your practice in the world, often we're data centric. But I have observed this, actually, that sometimes the answers come back and it refutes the optimistic projections. Then, you know, it's almost like, my facts are better than your facts. I mean, you know, there's been a very interesting conversation over the last few years, isn't there, about the validity of facts. And I think optimism can tend to get you into a position where you tend to ignore the facts that refute your perspective and look for the facts that support your perspective. There's a terminology that within my team I've adopted, and they sort of tease me about it a bit, but I use the metaphor, and I don't know whether I've used this view before, but have I used the metaphor where facts are like fish in the sea? Have I used that one with you, Peter?
No.
Facts are like fish in the sea, and there's loads of them, right? And so you go fishing for your facts, and you bring them up in your net, and then you put them out on your fishmonger's slab to display your facts, your fish. And they're facts, but you've chosen them. And therefore, they're the facts that support the image you wanted to portray, or the end game you wanted to portray, or the fish you wanted to sell. And I think optimists do that. You know, they pick their facts selectively.
Yeah, I struggle with that metaphor on the grounds that I wouldn't pick any because I don't like fish.
Yeah, but you have a loose relationship to facts as well, don't you, Peter? So I'm not surprised by that.
Listener, please write.
That one's for you, Mike. And then perhaps finally, I know.
Oh, good. I agree. I'm glad we're getting close to finally now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel you've responded to that Insult Peter request.
Yeah. Yeah.
You certainly stepped up.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Mike. And I hesitate to say this because we're both self-confirmed optimists, but I think optimists tend to overestimate their own abilities.
No comment.
Yeah, I do. I think optimists tend to consider themselves above average, and statistically that can't be right because on average people are going to be average.
Well, okay, yeah, true. I think okay. I made a note about something, and I'm going back to it now. I can't read my writing. Oh, okay. Yep.
It's the dark side. We were doing the dark side of optimism, Peter.
Yeah, I know. And I listened to all the points you made, and there were, in fact, only five. And then you talked about facts and fish and stuff like that. But no, the thing I wrote down was, can you have collective false optimism then?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Okay, I'll tick that box as well then. And that was a great debate, wasn't it?
You want me to justify that or give examples from our past?
I think listeners might want a little bit more than yes.
Well, but we see evangelical people at work, don't we, in our lives, find ways to simplify complicated things. They give people hope in situations where they can't see hope. And I hate to get this too personalized, but I know my mother thought that Boris Johnson was fantastic because he gave her hope. And there's a train of thought that actually Boris Johnson didn't do a very good job, really, but he was optimistic and people actually liked that about him. He was funny as well. But I think a lot of people were very troubled with his relationship with the truth and the way that turned out. So, yeah, no, I think there is a collective challenge with people following evangelical optimists.
Well, yes, obviously we don't want to get political, but yeah, I found Boris wildly entertaining. And politics generally isn't, so that's kind of a good thing, but hey ho. All right, and the other thing I noted there, because it's something I'm accused of quite a lot, but I think it's to do with creativity. And it's Mrs. T refers to me as the most mature child she's ever met, but I think it is that, and part of that I think is that it's kind of offered me that kind of creativity streak I've got, is because I still have that kind of slight childlike innocence and unlimited potential for doing crazy things. But do you think that is associated then to optimism, or can a sort of non-creative person be optimistic as well? Probably can.
Yes, I'm sure. I mean, I think optimism is not all about creativity, is it? It's about, go back to that definition, it's about having a having a perception that you're going to more likely to have a good outcome than a bad outcome. And, I think, you can take a data-driven approach to that, can't you? And in fact, a lot of people who probably wouldn't describe themselves as optimists actually get into that optimistic frame of mind by gathering data that supports their perspective. So no, I think...
Okay, yeah. So let's go down the creativity. I've already phrased it wrong, but it's almost like, is there a kind of a... we're all supposed to grow up, and we're all supposed to become sensible, and we're all supposed to become realistic, and... we lose that kind of childlike belief that everything's going to be fantastic in life. I think I was trying to go down more that route of, are optimist people who have kind of stopped developing that little substrand of humanity or something that allows them to have that optimism?
Possibly, yeah, possibly. Although it's complicated, though. People are complicated, and, it's wonderful. I mean, one of the downsides of optimism, which I didn't bring up, which I've just thought of, is I think... optimists tend to be very affirmative, and with individuals and interactions with individuals, you give lots of positive affirmation. But I've had experience of this. I'm sure you have too, where positive affirmation does not work well with people with low self-esteem. Mm, yeah. And I think we go through our lives and we do our best and we have our scars and we prevail, or we have our good days and our bad days. And I think that baggage we bring into our working life, and sometimes that baggage, if I could describe low esteem as baggage, is crippling, or it's very, very, it's very, very hard for people to hear positive things about themselves. And so I think you know, I think I want to believe that everyone has the opportunity to be optimistic, but they have, you know, events and situations and things in their past that actually sometimes means they just can't hear it. You know, just can't see it. Worth aspiring to, I'm sure. But I think so. I think maybe people do lose it a bit, but I don't think it's gone. I just think it's buried, and I think it can be found again.
Yeah.
And I would actually, I mean, I would actually like to refute the sort of, you know, we talk about optimists and we talk about pessimists, don't we? Two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
And I'd like to suggest that actually that's not very helpful. Because, I mean, if you think about the classic view of pessimists as a sort of an opposite to what we've been talking about, where, you know, a pessimistic outlook, you know, it's things like, it's not my fault. You know, there's generalizations like, oh, it's always the same. And it's a sort of a thing, you know, things are never going to get better. And you know, there's a sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy about that, isn't there? If you go into any interaction with those sort of attitudes, then if you don't believe it, you know, it isn't going to happen, is it? And so, you know, the optimist, you know, going back to the earlier definition, being the happy idiot, you know, if you actually have a narrative that has a positive outcome, I think you've opened the door to a positive outcome, even if it's no more likely than if you've got a narrative.
That becomes a positive self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. Exactly. Nothing exactly. But, you know, I don't actually, you know the term glass half full and glass half empty. You know,
there's a lot more to it than that, isn't it? Yeah. But yes.
Yeah. But I think I agree. It's sort of, it's not, I think looking at optimism and pessimism as a binary state, I don't think is very helpful.
It's a sliding scale, like all these things, isn't it? I mean, you're somewhere on the scale.
I think that's right. I think, would you say we all tend to a negative bias? I mean, do you think, you know, entropy rules and we actually gravitate to a more depressive state and actually we generate ourselves to be optimists? Would you think the optimistic state is the norm and we erode to a pessimistic state as we are assailed by life's, as we're blown hither and thither by the zephyrs of outrageous fortune?
So we're all very happy, but then life happens. So,
well, what do you think? Are we all very happy and life happens, or actually, you know, life's tricky and we generate ourselves?
I think our starting point has got to be a combo between nature and nurture, isn't it? And then, you know, what happens to us in life, really? It's interesting. I don't know. It's interesting. Well, as you know, for example, you know, Mrs. T started her own company, and it's interesting. On some days she's quite positive, and some days she's not. And what I'm trying to kind of, you know, coach her is the fact that, having done this myself and stuff, you see, you just keep going, and stuff will come out of things you're doing that are directly or indirectly, or sometimes massively indirectly connected, that you don't anticipate. But if you do enough of it, yeah, good things happen.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think that's right. And I think there's also a difference, just staying on pessimism for a moment. I think there's a difference between pessimism, because I think pessimism has got a bad rap, actually. I think there's a difference between pessimism and facing facts. You know, there's a slight, so I don't think pessimism is the opposite of optimism. I think it's its own construct. And actually, I'd like to argue, what do you think about this? I'd like to argue that sometimes pessimism pays off. There's a sort of a, you know, there's a sort of a black belt pessimistic attitude out there, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I've seen this employed. Oh, you've employed this, actually, where you basically generate yourself to work out what's the worst thing could possibly happen, and then you deal with it. And actually, this is an approach I sometimes take, which is, if you go into situations with low expectations, you're inevitably happily surprised when they don't transpire as negatively as you thought they could be. And so it's a trick, it's a conjuring trick, but I think it's an interesting way to control the fact that, you know, most of the time in life we're out of control. And if you can assume the worst and plan for the worst, it's likely to be better than that, and therefore there's a very positive outcome. And I think that helps control pessimistic tendencies that we all have. I don't know whether you'd agree with that.
My mind just melted as you went through that one. I don't know if that's true or not. I have no response, Daz. I have no response to that.
I'm going to claim that. I'm going to claim this phrase.
A statement of yours or proposition.
Defensive pessimism. I'm going to claim this. It's a tool to use in situations. Okay. Well, you talked about it earlier about bringing realism, you know, to counter the dark side of optimism, which is about, you know, ignoring risks and being not realistic, being blind to costs. You know, if you can, you know, travel optimistically, mm-hmm. but generate yourself to look at the worst possible case and deal with it, then is that the best of both worlds?
I don't know. I mean, I've gone on to the kind of, you know, I'm an optimist, but I have life insurance. So, you know.
I think there's power in negative. I mean, I'm an optimist. I mean, that's my creed. But I think there's power in negative thinking. In fact, some sports teams take this approach, don't they? That, you know, there's a philosophy. I mean, the Arsenal team of, was it the 80s or the 90s, where they didn't concede a goal for like 50 games or whatever it was. You know, the winner is the one that makes the fewest mistakes. There is an approach that says, just don't screw up and you do well because everyone else will screw up. So I think there's a real power in negative thinking. By negative thinking, I mean projecting what could possibly go wrong, planning for it. And then when it doesn't go wrong, all the optimistic possibilities suddenly open up in front of you.
Well, that's true, actually. I mean, you know, my own football team, not Forest. I mean, it's, you know, in the great Clough era, I mean, he was said to that. His philosophy was don't lose. It wasn't win, it was don't lose.
Yeah.
And actually, they did the first thing. I think it was the first time they won the league. Was, you know, they had an awful lot of draws, but they blocked every other team and, you know, won when they needed to win, really, enough to actually to succeed. I'm not sure that would work these days with the kind of shape of the Premier League. But yeah, I kind of get that.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I just sort of trying to sort of wrap up the loose ends here, really. I think.
You're trying to bring this to a close.
Well, I'm working on it, Peter. But, you know, I think, you know, we all look at life differently, but I think what you do is more important than how you see your glass, you know, whether you're half full or half empty. But there's power in both approaches, I think. And okay. As you said before, it's about balance, isn't it? And so, you know, we've got the positive thinkers that, you know, the positive thinking attitude, which encourages us to take risks and expand our horizons and sort of look positively on the potential. But, you know, we tend to ignore life's dangers perhaps, or perhaps exaggerate our own capabilities. And then you got the negative thinkers that you know, it can be detrimental perhaps when it sort of takes over and you worry excessively about consequences, and it can darken, I think, the view of the world when you have a negative mindset. But, you know, I think a little worry keeps you on your toes, doesn't it? And sort of this defensive pessimism that we were talking about, or yeah, you know, perhaps can help neutralize the optimistic bias that I think a lot of us have in business, because you can't really be in the business world and try and grow without being optimistic. But I think a bit of defensive pessimism helps.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a nice conclusion. And yeah, thank you. I can only say thank you.
Well, I think, you know, okay. Well, I won't say any more then. If you know, I'll stop with the thank you.
Well, you can. No, I'm not going to stop you. It's your subject. You can carry on as long as you like, really. But I don't know.
Our listener will be at work now, so I'm going to stop there.
Well, I just thought that was a very balanced and wise summation at the end there, really.
Which is the first time in 7 episodes you've ever said that to me. So thank you, Peter.
Hello. And listener, hope you noted that this episode I've been nice to Daz, and then this episode Daz has been quite mean to me.
But let's see what our viewing figures are like, Peter. I bet it's going to shoot up.
Actually, we should do some analysis. I mean, are the episodes where you're nasty to me more popular than the other ones? Very interesting. I'll do some research.
Well, it's only me listening over and again and again and just tittering gently as to my wit and acerbic comments. That's all it is.
Remember, I do the edit on this and I can insert some comebacks that I've actually thought.
Oh, good point. Yeah, it's like the minute taker having all the power, isn't it, in the old days?
It is. All right, so on that bombshell, I think it's a wrap.
Great, it's been interesting, Peter, and I thank you for being an optimist on life's journey with me.
Yeah, I'm an optimist. The next episode being better because it's my subject.
Have you got it? Have you? Do you know what it's going to be now?
I do. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, going to give me any clues?
No.
Thank you.
Of course not. That's not the game. But we do need to find the time to record it. So, thank you very much, Daz.
Thank you, Peter. Look forward to next time.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an unusual podcast from David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor. More information can be found at www.squidofdespair.com.